Hello, hello. How's it going, everybody? Stephen Ignoramus here. Welcome to Call Me Ignorant. It is 9:17 p.m., April 29th, 2019. We're about 15 minutes late because of some technical mishaps. So pleased you guys could be with us today. Call Me Ignorant is a show where visitors and I will talk and also let the internet do some of the talking. It's a show where we'll get to learn something new, ask each other the tough questions, and spend a little quality time solving the problems of the world together. We're streaming right now on a bunch of different platforms: YouTube, Twitch, Periscope, Mixer, DLive, Picarto, by looking for Stephen Ignoramus. If you can't catch the show live, you can find it after the fact on the above-mentioned platforms, also on BitChute. You can follow me on Twitter at IgnoramusSteve and email me at StephenIgnoramus@gmail.com with topic ideas, guests, and things that I can look up. My guest tonight is Matt Christensen. He is a podcaster, a YouTuber, and a creator of the online show Beauty and the Beta. It airs live on YouTube and DLive every Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern, featuring Matt and his co-host Blonde talking politics, pop culture, and the issues of the day. You can find him and all that he does at his website, mattchristensenmedia.com. Matt, really pumped to have you here, man. How's it going?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Sorry about the technical difficulties. I will fully admit that's on me, but I will blame Discord, which anybody who listens to our call-in show on Wednesday nights will know that there's always a Discord issue or two. So that's my excuse. Thanks for having me.
It's all good. It's always a little wonky. So I've been listening to your show for a couple years now, and I'm a pretty big fan. And I know some of my listeners are fans of it too. And I know that you started doing your YouTube channel with gaming and stuff like that. So I'm wondering, when did you get into doing more cultural and political commentary? Was there like a day you woke up, started thinking about it, or was it more of a gradual process?
I mean, the whole thing, my whole channel is basically an accident, to be honest.
Oh, yeah?
But it's very fortunate accident. Yeah. But you're right. It was back. The reason I started my channel is because I used to play Call of Duty with all my friends. And if you ever played video games back in the heyday, like Halo 2 era, Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare 2 era, everybody, can I swear on your show, by
sure.
the way?
Yeah, definitely. Okay.
Everybody just talked shit, you know? If you ever played video games in those days, everybody just talked shit all the time. And some of the encounters were really funny. And I thought, man, God, I got to start recording some of these because they're hilarious. And so I started recording those and posting them as pure hobby. Over time, Microsoft kind of cracked down on live chat and recording capabilities. And when the new Xbox came out, it was much more difficult. And they just incentivized like private party chatting. And they just made it much more difficult to create that type of content. And, you know, at that time in my life, I'm getting to be like 26, 27, 28 years old. It's probably a little bit old to be talking shit to 13-year-olds on the internet, you know? So, but I still enjoyed YouTube, and I had a very modest channel. I didn't want to quit outright, and I've always been a very politically interested person, although my perspective, I never know how much my perspective has changed and how much the left's perspective today has changed, but some combination of both. Anyway, I just started talking about news and social issues over video game footage for fun, and that, you know, it's not like any of that blew up, but it had a very small audience. And then eventually I just started appearing on camera because it seemed more sensible than like talking over unrelated Call of Duty or Battlefield footage or something.
So you would actually talk about it over, like, while the game was being played, you would talk about politics and culture?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Like, Call of Duty commentary and stuff. This was all the rage back in, like, 2014. It died out, I would say, like, 2015, 2016.
Yeah, I mean,
because back in the day, yeah, people just talking over video game footage was a big thing on YouTube.
Oh, I didn't know. When did you start your channel?
I started, like, January, February 2012.
Okay.
Yeah. And I didn't start talking politics and stuff until not even seriously and regularly until like late 2015, spring 2016. And then because my into the late spring and summer, when we actually started the podcast, we're coming up on 3 years now.
Yeah.
Or we're like at 3 years.
Sure.
I was at a point with my real life, my quote unquote real job, where the writing was kind of on the wall, and a lot of this, like a lot of the social justice progressive nonsense, was leaking into the workplace. I just knew I wasn't going to be able to work there anymore for a bunch of reasons. Not necessarily because I was mistreated or anything, just because I disagreed with the political landscape. Mm. And you had to be in line in that particular line of work. So I knew I wasn't going to be able to do that. I had something very small on YouTube, but I had saved up money. You know, I've been doing this job since I graduated college in 2010, so 5 years and change. And I'd saved up a little bit of money, and I thought, well, I don't know. I don't know if this is like a thing that will be a viable career path, but I can't do this job anymore. So I wonder what would happen if I just put all my energy into this and see where it goes. And that's how we got to where we are today. So that's why I say it's a total accident, because I never like sat down and thought, I'm gonna do this. This is gonna be my career path. It just kind of developed that way.
Gotcha. That's cool. So you do everything yourself. You don't have any type of producer or any type of help. You do all the tech. Yeah, that's cool.
No, there's nobody helping me at all. It's getting to the point where maybe we could, it'd be nice to have some administrative assistance, hire somebody to do, you know, things like answering emails, scheduling. Yeah. It'd be nice to have a producer on our show. We're not quite there yet. I think the other difficulty with that is, I know it's really weird because I hate being micromanaged. That was one of the difficulties with my past job. But I hate having someone hover over your shoulder and tell you how to do every little specific thing.
Yeah.
But I know if I had someone working for me, everything would have to be done my specific way. I know I would micromanage, which is odd. And I don't want to do that. I guess what I'm saying is I take a certain pride in having everything that goes up on my channel be done by me specifically, whether it's the writing or the on-camera stuff or the edit or any of the stuff, it's done by me. If you see it, you know, if my name's on it, it was done by me.
So the music intros, all the art, that's, well, someone else did.
Well, to be fair, like that's, you know, a lot of that stuff is like mashup creation or, you know, I'm not artistically inclined, but I guess what I'm saying as a whole, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and as far as the intros and stuff, yeah, it's like it's using clips and music and stuff, but it's mashing them up into original,
cool,
an original thing. So that's done by me, but it's not as though I wrote the music or something.
Wait, well, you brought up something earlier that, you know, one of the reasons I'm into your stuff is I'm really interested. Like, I guess I'm a big fan of the way that you handle, quote unquote, internet hate and, like you mentioned, unwanted criticism and stuff like that. And one of the first things I saw from you was the Cenk Uygur Ben Shapiro debate from a couple years ago, like the Just Google It thing. And you know, I read a bunch of the comments on that video, and I've been following you since then. So does the dealing with unwanted criticism and shit talk on the internet, does it come naturally? Is it more from gaming, the thick skin stuff? Like, how do you get that? Is that just your personality or what?
Maybe it has roots in that. To tell the truth, I admittedly get a little combative when people come at me. It's not criticism per se. Like, you can come at me with, like, I disagree with your idea. That doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
What bothers me is when people try to give me direction on how to do things. That will set me off.
How to run your show. Yeah.
How to run my show. How to do this. How to do that. So that sets me off. I don't actually delve into comments, and that's not because I don't appreciate all the things people post on my videos, whether they're nice things, whether they're hateful things. I'm never going to censor the comments. Of course, I want people to be able to discuss at length there. But to the point you're making, if I actively read every single comment that was posted about me or about my material on the internet, that would be an exercise in insanity. You will lose your mind. And there's a reason I just avoid that sort of thing. Emails is one thing. Like, if someone takes the time to actually get my email, write the message, hit the send button, know it's going to my eyes specifically, generally I'm more responsive there. But as far as YouTube comments, man, no. I mean, Blonde has access to my channel to handle the super chat and stuff through the show.
Right.
Like, you have 10,000 comments in that are held for review or suspected spam or whatever.
Damn. Yeah,
I'm never going to read them.
That's insane.
You think I'm going to go through and like mark them not as spam? I don't care. I do not care.
So you just let that part happen. And then, you know, if someone sends you an email, it's kind of, you know, they took the time and you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to be dismissive. Of course, I try to be as connected to our audience as possible. I think that's really important, but I have to recognize the difference between, say, being open to talking to someone on the call-in stream versus like some random anonymous guy on the comment section says I look like an idiot and wants to fight me or something like that. You know, who cares?
I saw one post. I think it was on Twitter. Someone emailed you to tell you to stop swearing.
And yeah.
I don't remember her name, but turn the fuck off.
No, yeah. I forget.
Just go fuck Cindy. Yourself, I think.
Yeah, go fuck yourself, Cindy.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Don't you think your arguments would be so much better if you didn't swear? I mean, I basically only swear in my videos for comedic effect or if I'm quoting someone. I don't really swear that much in them. And there's definitely swearing on the stream, but I actually don't think comparatively we swear that much. Like I listen to a lot of shows that have significantly more, you know, and that, I'm not saying that to shame those shows. I can't imagine the mindset of a person who has to try to word police people. It's like, if I get it, if you don't like swearing,
watch something else. There's so many channels out there.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, I mean, you brought this up earlier. I was going to ask this later in the interview, but one of the coolest things about your guys' show is your interaction with the fans. And you mentioned that you do a Wednesday call-in show, and so you guys read chats, you display fan-made art and stuff like that. The show started around 3 years ago, but did the fan interaction happen organically too, or did you start doing that since day one?
I don't really know how like the art trend really started. I don't know how these things happen, because it's not like I never put out a call for these things. I never said, hey, send us this stuff. Same thing like with the PO box. Like I got this terrorist guy. I don't know if you saw the stream last night, but I got some terrorist guy coming after me
with the PO box.
Whenever there's like funny or noteworthy or meaningful listener contribution, we like to highlight that, because I want it to be a community type experience as opposed to just, you know, us talking to you and telling you. It gets difficult because now I'm kind of paying the price for that. Back when the show was a much smaller thing, it's very easy to hand, like, whatever. Some, I used to joke, it's like there's no bar to get on this show. Oh, sorry, my computer just almost went into sleep mode. You still got me?
Yeah, we're good. Yeah,
okay. Yeah, the bar is like nobody's watching, so the bar is very low. I don't care now. I actually have to filter a little bit.
Yeah.
So I feel bad because I'm like, well, I'm going to have to filter out the no effort Photoshop.
Okay. Yeah. So the sheer volume is just a ton. Yeah. Because
it's the same thing with the meetups that have been so cool too. Is like they've been way more successful. I know. I saw you were at the one in DC.
Yeah.
So
that's really awesome. Yeah.
And that's awesome to see. I never expected to see this many people turning out to these sorts of things. That said, I got multiple cities sending me multiple pictures, and it's like, oh, crap, well, what are we gonna do? I can't do 20 pictures a show or something like that. So we have to figure out ways to filter that too. But these are, of course, good problems to have. This is not me complaining. This is Blonde and I are consistently impressed and very humbled by how many people make Sunday night an appointment to you know, hear what we have to say and to shitpost in the chat, frankly. So I'm glad that it kind of has organically become a community thing.
Cool. When did you guys start doing the call-in show?
The call-in show happened because, what happened was we did the Sunday stream starting in May of 2016. And then I used to do a video game stream on like Twitch on Wednesday nights. And I would just be like playing whatever game and talking to people in the chat. But that was, for one thing, like I'm not a particularly talented video game player, and I don't think I'm that great just streaming solo either. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was doing, just streaming by myself, talking to people, playing a game. And so they didn't generate much momentum, you know, and I just didn't have a lot of passion for them either. And I realized, I'm like, I don't feel like doing these anymore. And I used to do a video game podcast before this whole show came about, and we would occasionally use Discord to take calls that way. So I thought, well, what if I just started doing like a call show on Wednesday nights instead? And originally it was planned just to be me. It was not actually going to be a Blonde thing, because I didn't I didn't expect her to put in more work than she had already signed up for. Mm. And I thought, well, I'll just do it myself. And then I did it once and it went decently well. And then Blonde was like, well, why wasn't I in on that? I was like, well, I didn't think you wanted to do more work, but yeah, if you want to do Wednesday night too, let's do Wednesday night. And so it just, that's how that came to be. And we've done it. That was starting like September of 2016. I remember on election night or the call-in show after the election night when Trump got elected, the Wednesday after. Mm. I remember I stayed on there till like every single caller got through. That one was like three hours plus.
Sweet. Yeah.
That's kind of how the show was born. And admittedly, I kind of have a love hate with the call-in show. Like I like doing it. But it's just, you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah. Dude.
And I'm sure, you know, as a listener and a participator, like, sometimes people are hilarious. Sometimes they really make me think. Sometimes it's like, I'm going to get in trouble if somebody hears this. Sometimes it's like, how do I get this guy to shut up?
Yeah. And
that's not a shot at any, I'm thankful to everybody who's participating in it, but it's such a wild card that you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah. You got that one guy now that calls in that goes like in character. His name's like Del.
Yeah,
or something like that.
Del, yeah, the redneck.
Hysterical. So yeah. I didn't know it had been around for so long. And so I guess one of the things I wanted to get back to for a second this is one of the things I ask a lot of my guests is how did you and your close friends and family discuss politics, important issues and stuff like that when you were younger, like if at all? I didn't really talk about that stuff at all with my family. So how did you do that with your family?
I would have hated my 18-year-old self.
Yeah, for sure.
Retrospectively. Yeah. I was a hardcore progressive when I was very politically interested, you know. I got like anti-war patches on my hoodie and stuff like that. That was the thing at the time, because I kind of like I was in high school, I graduated 06, and so I was kind of coming to age at the height of the Iraq war.
Right, me too. Yeah.
And freaking everybody hated Bush, and I hated Bush.
Yeah,
you know. And so that's how I came to be a progressive. And yeah, I was very outspoken, very loud about my political beliefs. And some of them I would still agree with in full. Like I'm sure the kind of, cultural rebel angle that I thought I was going with, I would still probably mostly agree with. Mm. That is to say, like being quote unquote anti-establishment or whatever, you know, I'm sure I thought I was way cooler than I actually was. But I used to, the main thing that's changed for me in terms of my politics is just the way I view the role of government in like tax and spend, providing opportunity type realm. I have basically no faith in the federal government in particular to do that anymore.
Right.
Whereas I used to think, oh yeah, sure, the government could definitely provide jobs where they're needed. It could definitely provide quality healthcare where it's lacking. It could definitely make education more accessible, all that stuff I bought into, and I don't anymore. But I actually, I've always been an extremely political person, but oddly enough, most of my friends and family really aren't. Mm. And I would hope if I could go, this is how I like to remember myself. So I'm trying to be as fair as I can with how I like to remember myself versus how I actually was. But I think the difference is I don't remember myself ever actually hating conservatives and thinking that they're evil. Like when I was in college, man, I remember I went to the college Republicans meeting because they had free pizza. And I was just like, all right, I'll hang out with you guys. I didn't agree with anything they were saying, but I could go to lunch with those guys. I could eat pizza with those guys. We could talk about politics. And I didn't think that they were evil people, even though I hated George W. Bush. I hated the Republican Party. And I mean that intellectually, like I hated their ideas. But as far as the people, I don't think I was ever a progressive like today where it's like, no, on account of your beliefs, you are a morally inferior person who is to be purged from society.
Right.
And I've never been on the censorship train. That's one thing that's what lost me with progressives. And that's what I really started talking about when I shifted to the political content. It's like, listen, man, we're not going to go down this road of trying to censor people we disagree with. And if it's not censorship, trying to shame people for having different opinions. Mm. I've never bought into that. So right. I hope, even though I would have thought of, even though I'm, if I could go back and look at my 18-year-old self, I'd tell him to clean up and stop being a dumb hippie. But I don't think that that 18-year-old kid was trying to censor people like today.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, I would love to see hippie Matt. That'd be a treasure.
It's weird because I bought into all that hippie crap, but I was actually pretty much on the straight and narrow as far as my own behavior. You know, I didn't smoke weed. I didn't drink. I didn't do any of that stuff. I wasn't into if I was into the free love stuff, I wasn't achieving that goal anyway. So it's like, I was a hippie in perspective, but not in practice, if that makes sense.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we certainly have people on both sides, with a lot of hate for the individuals in the, on whatever side of the divide you can say, but what do you think the main driver of that is? Do you think it's mostly social media, or do you think it's, I don't know. What's your take on that? What the big driver of the hate is?
I wish I could tell you. I guess this is one thing that we've been talking about on the call-in stream in particular, and maybe I've gone too far in the opposite direction, but what I try to avoid is assigning a moral value to perspectives and opinions. I guess the problem is when you see someone, this person believes X, therefore they are morally inferior. And if you can moralize that, you can justify all sorts of unjust treatment towards them, trying to censor them, trying to browbeat them into doing X, Y, or Z, trying to mistreat them in any number of ways. And so, you know, again, maybe I've gone too far in this direction. I think about it all the time. Like, is there a such thing as a moral opinion or thought or belief or not? And should we be punishing? If there is, should we be punishing people for their opinions or their thought or and all that? And I've never really been on that bandwagon. I guess, you know, to people who push back on me and say that there are immoral thoughts and immoral beliefs, I can see where they're coming from. But I think we just have to be careful of the vice that exists on the end of that perspective, which is this sort of this moralizing behavior where we can't even be friends with people who have different opinions from us because we view them as degenerates, basically, by virtue of their thoughts.
Yeah, that makes sense. So where do you see the future going? A lot of people throw around the term culture war and, you know, that we're in a culture war or a cultural divide. And do you see it getting any better? Or, you know, a lot of people also say that there's never been cultural cohesion here. That's one of the things that makes it America. It's not just like one society, one culture. But, you know, how do you see that playing out in the next 5 to 10 years? Do people going to get along on either side? Do you think it's going to get worse?
I don't know about, with the latter perspective that you mentioned, I don't know about that. I don't know how you can maintain a society that doesn't agree on fundamental values.
Right.
And that's why I always characterize this as Bill of Rights or not.
Yeah.
That's the idea here. Do you believe that the ideas in the Bill of Rights, generally speaking, not just legally, but culturally, are good ideas? And I think there's a large segment of the radical left that would say these are fundamentally bad ideas. I don't hope for conflict. I don't want conflict. I certainly will not take part in instigating conflict.
Mm.
But I don't know how you maintain without agreeing on like the baseline level values for your country. And that's kind of the libertarian's dilemma that I see as someone who, I guess, identifies in that camp. Although the thing, it's like Groundskeeper Willie on The Simpsons with, you know, there's nobody the libertarians hate more than other libertarians.
Right.
So I don't get involved in the infighting. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, to the extent you're a person who values liberty, and I hope that I am one, your liberty value will only survive to the extent that you surround yourself with people who also value it. If you surround yourself with people who are authoritarians or crave authoritarianism, well, all of a sudden, it's going to be a battle of force to decide who's going to win out, because it can no longer be laissez-faire. Oh, you do you, man. You live your life and I'll live mine. Well, what happens when you surround yourself with people who, you know, whether they're hyper-progressives and they want to tell you what pronouns to use, or whether they're Islamists and they demand that you bow to Mecca or whatever else? If you surround yourself with people who want to control your life, the values of liberty cannot survive.
Hmm.
And that's kind of the dilemma. It's like, well, yeah, I want everybody to live the life that they see fit for themselves. Problem is, a lot of people see a life fit for themselves that is controlling other people.
Hmm.
And I have to figure out how to hopefully persuade them against that. But worst case scenario, I mean, you hear us joking about prepping and stuff on the show. Worst case scenario, I also have to be able to defend myself and my family and my country, frankly, if these forces decide to encroach unjustifiably. So I guess my perspective is the classic hope for the best, prepare for the worst. I'm never going to instigate or be an aggressor against other people. But I don't know, man. I see a lot of people who I worry about being an aggressor toward me and my community. So I certainly don't want to be helpless if the worst case scenario develops.
Yeah. Well, we talked about kind of free speech and censorship for a second, but one of the things I take from your show and listening to you give other interviews and stuff is you're a big proponent of the Second Amendment and gun rights. Mm-hmm. When you were a progressive back in the day, were you always did you always have this value strongly, or did that evolve over time?
I was never really an anti-gunner per se. Yeah. Like, I've never been a confiscationist, and I've never been I've not been where the modern Democratic Party appears to be going. But I used to buy into the slogans like, you know, my common sense gun control and, mm-hmm. and increased background checks and all this stuff. But the reality is, and I know this is oversimplified perhaps, but I do believe it's true. I think on the issue of guns, more than any other issue, it really breaks down between people who understand both firearms and the law that governs them and people who don't. And I say this as someone who formerly did not. When I was more in favor of increased gun control, frankly, I did not know specifically what I was talking about. And I say that to mean I didn't know specifically how a lot of these firearms that people want to regulate even work, what the components of them are. And I also didn't understand the federal law and a lot of the state law that exists that is, you know, a lot of the times the failures, like, for example, the shooting in California this weekend at the synagogue. I mean, they make these things double, triple illegal, and they still happen. So it's a question, like, is additional law actually going to solve that? If California is not enforcing its own state law, I don't know if there were federal laws breached in this case or not, but perhaps there were. If you don't know what the existing legal framework is, you're just arguing for stacking duplicate law on top of existing law, and that's just silliness. That's just to make yourself feel good. That's not actually going to have any effect.
Hmm.
So as I learned more, yeah, I've gone, I've shifted on that a lot, to the point that, listen, in my dream world, every home would defend itself with an automatic rifle. That would a short-barreled automatic rifle, preferably. We got a lot of law to repeal to make that happen.
Yeah.
So
One of the things that I've brought up with some guests and just on my own show is that you know, people talk about big and small government, and I believe that government starts at the individual level. I mean, discipline and like controlling yourself in all kinds of ways. You can't just say whatever to whoever, even though it's free speech. It's just that you shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't tell your grandma to fuck off and, like, you know, just like things like that. So that's where kind of some of the ways I've evolved on gun rights as well, is that, you know, you're your own government at the end of the day. You have to, the buck stops with you. And, you know, you hear these stories about the cops taking 30 minutes to show up, and it takes 30 seconds for an altercation to happen. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you're not allowed to have your own means of protecting, like, what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, that's I'm not an ANCAP. I'm not fully on board with those ideas. I do see legitimate purposes for government. And of course, I respect our police officers and our emergency responders. And if there's an emergency at my home, I'm dialing 911 and I hope they come to help me. But that's the point that you're making. At the end of the day, I am my own first and last line of defense. If the police can't get here, if they won't get here, whatever, if the guys just if some dude just barges into my house right now, physically impossible for the police to respond in time before he puts myself or my family at risk. And if I can rely on the police, I will rely on the police. But the point is, even the best police in the entire country can't protect me on a moment's notice. And, you know, again, to refer to what happened in San Diego over the weekend, the best cops in the world couldn't have been there fast enough to stop that, even though the guys people saw this guy's post on the internet, I'm going to go to a synagogue and shoot it up now. And what did it take? Yeah, the guy who eventually chased him off was an off-duty officer, but at that point he's operating as a civilian.
Mm.
And he's saving 50 of his fellow worshipers at the synagogue. So good for him. And that doesn't mean that I think I don't know. I guess this stuff gets characterized like I don't believe, like you don't believe in the police or something like that, or like you're a total anarchist. It's like, no, I refuse to be at the mercy of someone like that synagogue shooter or someone like the guy who shot up the theater in Colorado. People say, oh, are you really going to stop the shooter? Maybe. I mean, I'll be the first to admit I'm not a great handgun shot. I work on it. I'm not fantastic. If the heat of the moment arrived, I'm sure I'd be freaking out with adrenaline rushing, and I don't know that I'd be cool enough to make a shot. But the point is, when I watched that mosque shooting footage out of Christchurch, yeah. Did you watch the footage?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know about you, but to me, it was a lot less graphically violent than I expected. Like, I expected just nastiness, and it was a lot cleaner than I thought. But the point is, it was it wasn't the gore, it was the helplessness, man.
Yeah.
It was just everybody there was at the mercy of this guy. And sure, if I'm in a situation like that, I might die. He might kill me for sure. I'm not guaranteeing that I save anybody, including myself. Point is, I want the chance.
Yeah. I mean,
I want a chance.
It's, you know, you mentioned just believing in police, but it seems to me that it's a kind of a belief in like physics and time at that point. Cause like the officers, like true or false, the officers are there. They're not there currently. Yeah. And it takes X amount of, even if they're next door, those tires don't move as fast as a bullet. And it's just, it's like, do you believe in like actual science of, you know, that this is possible, they're not there, bam, like we should be able to defend ourselves, right?
It's like the guy in the mosque, when you watch the footage, the one dude who tried to charge him from the side and he kind of knocks him over, he bull rushes this guy bravely. I'd like to think that I'd be that brave in such a situation. I don't know.
I ask myself that all the time, like, you know, you just don't know until something happens.
But he did.
Yeah.
And he got about 95% of the way to stopping this guy, but he didn't. And he got shot. He got shot dead on the footage. I watched him get shot. And imagine if he has that same. So the guy, you know, shooter's walking through the hallway. This guy's kind of in the room here on his side. He tries to bull rush him and take him out, hits him, gets shot. Imagine if he's standing right here, handgun pointed. Very possibly ends right there. But, you know, we'll never know. And now, unfortunately, that guy's life is lost, and a lot of people's life is lost at that mosque in Christchurch.
Wow. Well, we're running out of time here. I wanted to ask you one more thing before we wrap up. Well, first of all, what's your take on, I didn't plan this, but what's your take on them prosecuting people who post that video in New Zealand?
Oh, that's garbage.
It's garbage. That's, yeah, me too. Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I fully respect anybody who's like, listen, I don't want to watch it. And I debated myself whether I wanted to watch it, but And let's put it this way. I think a courteous person would not just post it to Facebook and say,
right,
check it out. No way.
Yeah.
Right. But as far as the state prosecuting you for that, no, I think that's flat out insanity. I think it's sort of like the state policing respect at that point. Like, would it be polite of me to come on this show and say, well, thank you, Stephen, for hosting me. I had a very nice time. Yes, that would be the polite thing to do. But if I say, fuck you, I hated this. You know, that's very rude. I don't think the state should punish me for that. It's like sending an unsolicited dick pic or something like that. Awfully rude.
Yeah.
But again, you know, I guess, well, I should think about this, because the context of minors, you got a problem with the dick pic. What about the context of minors with the shooting? I don't know. Point is, let's assume we're talking in the realm of adults here. That is just communication material, like anything else. And it's up to you whether you want to watch it or not. And it's up to you whether you want to surround yourself with people who freely share it without having the courtesy to inform you about what's going on. But yeah, that's, That's crap. Putting people in jail. And it's not just the footage, by the way. It was the manifesto.
Just the manifesto, yeah.
The text.
Yeah, a guy just got 14 years, I think, for posting the video.
He got sentenced. Yeah. Really?
I think so. I think I saw an article about that. I think I read about it on my stream.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah.
For posting words.
Yeah. So it might have
been mean words.
It might have been the video. I know a guy got sentenced to 14 years for posting something regarding it, though, in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Oh
my God.
So anyway, we are running a little over time here, so we're going to wrap things up. I just had one more question. So you're definitely a role model of mine, and one of the reasons I'm doing my stream now is from listening to you and a lot of the clues. You know, like one of the things I like about you is that you post what gear you use and what software you use on your YouTube channel. Mm. So what advice would you give to any aspiring creators or people in media that are getting their shit going?
Well, thanks for the kind words, and I really appreciate hearing that, because that's, I feel exactly the same way about people who inspire me and still do, you know, people I admire and listen to and stuff. So when that goes the other direction, I really appreciate it. As far as advice, like number one thing I would say is do not expect, I think people still think that you can make a job out of this, and yes, you can. But that's not a good reason to get into it. Mm. It's just like any other hobby. You have to treat it as that. You have to have a passion for it. And the thing about this, just like a lot of other jobs, is it's incredibly repetitive. If you want to make a podcast that succeeds, or a stream, or a YouTube channel, you can't do it on like, I'm going to get the viral video every week or something. That's not the way it works. You have to stay extremely consistent. You got to give your audience what they want when they want it. And that means you're going to have to do it each and every day, week, whatever your schedule is, without fail. So that's the first thing, is you got to establish that you enjoy doing it for its own sake. Like in my case, if I had to get another job to pay the bills, I wouldn't quit my YouTube channel. I don't know that I'd be able to produce at the same rate, but I love doing this, so I wouldn't quit. That's the feeling that you have to have, because you will burn out if you don't genuinely enjoy it for its own sake. And then the other thing I would say on the technical end is, like, when I started doing the stream, even when I started doing this entire channel, I didn't have any knowledge of like how this stuff works in terms of making videos, like editing them, producing them, all that stuff. I've kind of learned it on the fly. If I could start over, part of the difficulty for me is like, I switched from video games to this, so I had to just learn it on the fly. But if I was starting from scratch, make practice stuff. You know, like if you're starting a channel tomorrow that's fresh, just make a bunch of practice stuff. And that helps answer the first question that I said, which is, did you enjoy making it? Because I know everybody, you see the glamorous end where the video's up on YouTube and everyone's fighting in the comments or whatever. And that looks really cool. But did you enjoy the multiple hours that went into it? That's the first question. Then the second thing is what you're producing up to par? Like, I think the only standard that I have for people, because sometimes I get people emailing me asking, can you give me some feedback on this? Or is it good or whatever? I don't know. I mean, I can tell you my subjective judgment, but the point is you're not making material for me, you know? So my only standard is you should be making material that you yourself would watch. Like if someone sends me a video of them rollerblading, I don't like rollerblading. But if you do and you're making it for people that do, that's all that matters. And as far as the practice stuff, you'll clean up a lot of the technical issues if you make that practice stuff first. So, you know, if I was starting the podcast over, what I should have done is made a handful of straight up practice episodes, watched them back myself, had family or friends watch them back with me to evaluate things like technical things, like were the audio levels balanced right?
Right.
Does all this stuff look good or not?
Gotcha.
And then some of it is just stylistic stuff. And it's things like vocal tics and stuff,
yeah.
The way people speak, the way you present.
Right.
I have them. Everybody has them. But some people have them really bad, you know, and it can be distracting. Mm. So you'll never get used to it, you know, to this day, like sitting down, being on the camera for 2 hours on Sunday night, or like when I do my solo videos and they're scripted and I talk into a camera that's behind that for like an hour by myself. It always feels weird, man. It still feels weird to this day. You're just in a room by yourself. Like you're recording some ISIS video or something like that. So it's always going to feel weird, but that's the point, is like, it's, you know, it's 10%, 20% less weird today than it was in 2016. And if you don't come off as like, whether you're trying to be funny, whether you're trying to be serious, whether you're trying, whatever you're trying to be, if you don't come off as genuine, it's very difficult to succeed. So a lot of that's just practice stuff. Just getting familiar with a weird mic in your face and cameras on you and lights too. Mm. That's the other thing. Lights get hot.
Yeah.
Got to get used to that.
Wow. Yeah. Well, dude, thanks a lot for your time, man. I really appreciate it. And it was good talking to you. It was awesome.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks for tuning into our show and the support you've shown for our show. And I hope the stream works out for you. I assume you've started as like number 7, right?
Yeah, this is interview number 7. I've been doing my weekday stream, which is news and history, and I'm almost at episode number 100. So, yeah, just all this year, I do it every weekday. So
well, I haven't seen your channel yet, so I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, thanks a lot. So, yeah, that was Matt Christensen. You can find him at mattchristensenmedia.com or follow him on Twitter at mlchristensen. You can watch his podcast, Beauty in the Beta, wherever podcasts are found. You guys are on all the big ones, right? Spotify, Stitcher.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to watch live, it's on my YouTube channel. We're also on DLive now, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
It's a cool platform.
Yeah, I
love
it.
Send us some lemons.
Yeah, some lemons. Yeah, I like it.
Whatever that is.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks a lot for coming out to Call Me Ignorant, everybody. Catch my stream, like I said, Daily Ignoramus every weekday. Follow me on Twitter, Ignoramus Steve. Send me an email at Stephen Ignoramus. Have a nice night. Go inform yourselves.